Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning and welcome to your Monday. It is Columbus Day today, and it is all of October 9th, so glad. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had some time to relax and enjoy some downtime, because that's pretty important too. And as we face our Monday, let me remind you of something that's out of Proverbs chapter 23. It says, "May I not wear myself out to get rich. Give me the understanding to cease. May I not set my desire on what flies away, for wealth surely sprouts wings and flies into the heavens like an eagle." So it's work is a wonderful thing, and you should be very grateful. And anything you do, you can treat as an act of worship to God today, because every job has dignity because you're doing it. So that's a good thing. So it's been a very busy weekend and a busy week last week. So I hope we can start to put the pieces back together between the storms and the Las Vegas shooting and everything else that's been going on. I saw something interesting that Molly Hemingway said on the special report panel was compassionate and illuminating, and it cooled my outrage a little bit. She said, "We're pretending we're having a debate on gun control, but we're really having a debate about the nature of evil and whether a big enough government can contain it," which it can't. So we've got a problem with evil, and that's what we will always have a problem with, because we live in a fallen world, and there's lots of evil. So there we go. All right, I think I'm going to take a little break, and then we're going to have a very interesting conversation on the studio line with Tom Nelson, Dr. Tom Nelson. He's president of Made to Flourish. And there's a conference coming up, and it's going to be a very unique experience, going to be hosted by about 20 different locations around the country. And churches are not just called to seek their own flourishing, but instead to seek the flourishing of all people. So we're going to find out what that's about. I'm very, very interested. So we'll take a break at 6 minutes after the hour. And when I come back, Dr. Tom Nelson. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here doing my best impression of a radio professional. So I have Dr. Tom Nelson on our studio line. He is the president of Made to Flourish, the author of The Economics of Neighborly Love, Work Matters, Connecting Sunday Worship to Monday Work, on and on and on. He's a regular speaker and facilitator in faith, work, and economics. He is a senior pastor, too, at Christ Community Church in Kansas City. And so he is now head of Made to Flourish, with a big conference coming up. Want to hear about it. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. I'm very interested in the Made to Flourish conference.
Well, we're really excited about it. It's our first national kind of conference. And what I'd love to just say to you and your listeners is that it's a wonderful opportunity for church leaders and pastors to really think deeply about their stewardship to Monday and not just Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us pastors think a lot about Sunday or wherever we lead worship, and that's important. We don't think enough about equipping our people for Monday. And so the goal is to help pastors really be more effective on connecting Sunday to Monday.
I started, Tom, my work day with Isaiah 1, verse 17. It says, "Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow." Sounds like there's a flourishing reference in there.
There is. There's a timelessness to that. I mean, Jesus himself says that the Father sends the rain on the just and the unjust. Paul says, "Do good to all men, especially the household of faith." So I do think there's a strong statement in the Old and New Testament that we are to care for everyone, all image bearers, and not just people of the household of faith. And I would just say that I think common grace or the common good is the fertile soil where saving grace really takes root.
Mm-hmm. So how do we pursue this common good with our neighbors and at our workplace and in our cities? Maybe give us some examples of how we might start thinking.
Well, I think what first thing we need to do if we're followers of Christ and love the scriptures is that we need to have a rich theology of the common good from creation to consummation. I just say that's where I find most people don't really think through how the gospel speaks into every nook and cranny of life. So I think that's the first thing. I mean, that sounds like a pastor speaking, but I think we need to have a compelling theology that leads us to practical action that makes a difference. So what I would say first is just that we need to see our work, especially if it's a workplace where it's monetized in a global economy, to see that as a primary way we love our neighbor through our work every day, and that we have to help not only have Christ-like compassion to others, but build economic capacity. And that's part of the Great Commandment and part of the new book that I've just written that kind of connects economics with theology. So I'd say do your work well, help build economic capacity through entrepreneurship and other ways. That's one of the best ways to love your neighbor, both local and global.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that? Because if I'm just driving and I'm a little tired and I'm trying to get a grasp on what's going on, what action could I take or what could I be thinking about differently?
Well, what I suggest is if someone's driving to their paid work today, I mean, there's paid work and non-paid work, is that's the primary way we love our neighbor and serve God. It's our primary place of worship, primary place where we live out the gospel, share the gospel. So I would just be excited about going to work, even though it might be hard, that the workplace is one of the most important places to love our neighbor. I think we miss that in a global economy. When you think about this, Bill, in human history, as far as we know, never have we had the ability to love our neighbor more, global and local, through our global economy.
That's true.
I just think we need to connect Sunday to Monday better for all of us to see how valuable Monday is and what we do every day, even though sometimes it doesn't seem that great.
Mm-hmm. Seems like we have to be always reminded that we need to treat each day we go to work as an act of worship to God, and then to have a sense
Indeed.
Of gratitude in our heart that we actually have a job to go to.
Yes, very much. And for me as a pastor, I just said I really committed pastoral malpractice, Bill. That's what I'd call it the first 5 to 6 years of my pastoral ministry. I was so focused on helping people be good Sunday Christians, I really wasn't equipping them for Monday life. And so that's what this Common Good Conference is also about, is to help pastors understand they have to connect Sunday to Monday. Because when pastors flourish, congregations flourish. When congregations flourish, communities flourish. And obviously God is glorified.
Well, you are forgiven, Tom, just so you know.
Thank you for that absolution.
You have my absolution.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So when I think of the golden rule, and I always think that we need to try to meet other people's needs with the same energy and intensity with which we meet our own needs, but that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think one of the things that's really important from Scripture, Bill, that stunned me when writing this book, I spent a lot of time working in economics and theology, but for example, Ephesians 4:28, I mean, to think how significant this is that Paul says, let the thief no longer steal. I mean, the gospel transforms our economic life. And he goes on to say, but let him work with his hand, laboring, really working hard. That's the idea. So that he may have something to give to anyone in need. So I think that's the idea that our work not only glorifies God and only provides our needs and our family's needs. It creates the capacity for us to love our neighbor in tangible ways and really help them.
Mm-hmm. I like that. You know, it's also a reminder that when you go to a job, you also should enjoy the fact that you belong somewhere, that you have a sense of belonging and you're sharing, a common mission with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, this for people that work by themselves or are self-employed or they're booting up their home office right now, even those folks regularly have to get away from their desk just to get out in fellowship with other people. They need to go where they have a sense of belonging.
Yeah, I think that's a unique privilege and unique challenge in our global economy right now, our information economy, is that we don't need to have a particular location for a lot of our work, especially if we're a more information worker.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we need to find that place of belonging. I mean, many people still go to office and are part of a larger corporation or a business where they have fellowship and connection. But I think there again, if you work on your own, it's really important to have a local church and neighborhood kind of involvement and other associations where you really connect with others.
Mm-hmm. Tom, let me take a little break. When I come back, I want to talk all about the Common Good Conference, which is coming up, and I want to hear why I should attend and what I can expect to experience. I'm speaking to Dr. Tom Nelson. Be back in just a minute. Good morning. It is Monday, October 9th, Columbus Day, and I have on the studio line Dr. Tom Nelson from Made to Flourish. We've got a very interesting seminar coming up. What should I call it, Tom? Is it a one-day event?
Yeah, it's a one-day event, but we hope it's a lifetime of learning. And,
okay. Love it.
It's going to be simulcast around the country in about 20 locations.
Okay.
You can go to our Made to Flourish website to find out the locations and sign up with it. The goal of the conference, we're going to have some of the finest national speakers in the space of helping people connect Sunday to Monday. People like Andy Crouch and Amy Sherman, Chris Brooks. I mean, it's going to be an outstanding national team. They'll be speaking out of Kansas City. It'll be simulcast around our nation. And I'm really hopeful that pastors and congregational leaders will come together in their local regions, make some important connections and relationships of like-minded pastors and leaders, and really make a difference in their locations and their cities. God is up to something across the country in the faith, work, and economic movement, and we're seeing churches really get on board.
I would agree. Tom, I think there's a lot of people that are headed to work right now saying, I think there is the divide between godly work and then everything else, and that's just not true, is it?
No, it's not true. It's a common thought, but I mean, when we look at scriptures again, we look at Genesis 1 and 2, that work began before fall. Into sin and death. And so work is part of God's original design. And if I read the Bible right, it will continue on in the new heavens and earth. So we've got to work well, learn well now, and make a difference in our work because God loves our work. He's honored by our work. And Paul says, whatever we do, do it to the Lord. So our work matters. We say that a lot of Made to Flourish. Whether we're paid or not paid, it really does matter. And it's the primary way we worship God every day, primary way we seek the common good, proclaim the gospel, live the gospel out. Because God's placed us in work a good part of our time, right?
Right.
A chunk of our life we work.
You know? Oh, yeah. Well, not in my case, but, you know, for most people.
Well, you know, on a good day.
On a good day, yeah. So put on your pastor hat for a minute and give me some biblical foundations for this idea of connecting faith and work.
Yeah, I would start right away with Genesis 1 and 2. If we don't get Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 right, we don't get the rest of the Bible right. What we see is that God's a worker. He creates us in his image as a worker. Genesis 1 and 2 is very much about work and the importance of cultivating and keeping the garden. Of course, sin, right? Sin enters the world, and we see in Genesis 3 how sin hinders our fruitfulness of our work. But you know, it's interesting, at the end of Genesis 3, Adam and Eve are sent out of the garden to do what? To keep working.
Mm-hmm.
So God still wants us to work, and all the way through the scripture, Bill, we see the importance of work. Jesus, for example, I just chuckle when people tell me they never heard a message of him, but Jesus spent the vast majority of his time on planet Earth, 30 of 33 years in a carpentry shop,
right,
working with his hands, running a small business. And we often forget how that fits into our story. So all the way through the scripture, the Apostle Paul, Peter, emphasize the importance of doing our work well. In fact, Paul will say, hey, if we don't work, we shouldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
Or not willing to work. So it is a very central thread in the scriptures. And it really matters.
Tom, wouldn't you love to hear some customer service stories when Jesus was working in the shop?
Well, I would. You know, I don't think we've thought about that. I mean,
well, of course we don't.
I studied in the Middle East, and yeah, I mean, I've lived there, and, you know, the Middle Eastern culture is very intense. Can I say that? I'm sure you have customers who were demanding and difficult. And
yes. Why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's just the business. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he did really good work, and I'm sure that when we read the scriptures that Jesus was tempted in every way yet without sin. I think he faced every difficult customer without sin.
I agree. That's why I would love to have some customer service stories as to how he handled things, because obviously he always cared for people, but he still ran a little business, didn't he?
He did. In fact, the more we know about it, it might have been a very vibrant business because the Roman armies were nearby, and there was a lot of big building projects. So Jesus was a gifted small business person. And it's not surprising that the vast majority of his parables and stories when he becomes an itinerant rabbi mm-hmm. are tied to the marketplace. It's not surprising.
Yeah, and I'm sure he had his share of, hitting his finger with the hammer and a sliver here and there. And I mean, that's just.
I don't think he cursed, though.
I don't think he did either. I'm pretty sure that goes without saying. Yeah. Okay, how would the conference, Tom, help the churches feel more energized? Because I think a lot of churches today feel exhausted because the staffing demands and everything else. How do we empower people in churches to go do more good?
Well, what I would say is it's not just doing more. I mean, I think that's the danger for all of us. We get so much coming at us. And I know pastors and Christian leaders of churches are tired at times. But what I'd say is that the stories you're going to hear, the pastors and Christian leaders are going to really inspire them around the country. And I think it's going to be a spark of creativity and innovation for churches to think more energetically about their mission in their community. I think churches, like any organization, get a little dull, get a little overwhelmed, get a little myopic. And I think this is going to open people's eyes and hearts what people are doing around the country, and we're going to say, wow, we could do that at our church, and this would be exciting to bring energy to our church, not to add more work for us to do. So I think it's going to be a powerful conversation. I hope people will come, and they'll be very encouraged. It's not just another thing. It's reframing our mission in light of God's calling and God's word.
And tell us when it is, because I don't know if we've even said that yet.
Yes, it's a perfect day, right? It's Friday, October 13th. Friday the 13th.
That's so easy to remember for some reason.
So I want to encourage people to go. It's a day. It's going to be an engaging day. There'll be national conversations coming in on simulcast, and then local speakers who will bring texture to that specific city. And I'm hopeful that during the day there'll be relationships formed and a collaborative kind of spirit around churches and leaders around each city.
Okay, now, just because it's still early, let's see, today is the 9th?
Yes.
Would that be this Friday?
It's this Friday.
Okay,
right.
I just want to make sure you're not pulling that's 2018. We're doing a lot of legwork in advance.
It's this Friday, but it's worth, even though it's kind of, short timing, it's worth your time, so I hope people will come.
Yeah, and the website would be madetoflourish.org.
Correct. You can go right on there, and they'll have CG 2017. That's the Common Good Conference.
Okay.
CG 2017, yep.
And I will be praying for you. I'll write this down because this sounds powerful.
Thank you.
Powerful, and can equip churches and pastors effective right away.
Indeed. If it's anything like our experience, it will be transformational in terms of a local church mission. So pray for us, and thank you so much.
And God bless you and your work, Tom. Have a great week. I know you're going to probably sleep very little this week.
Hopefully I'll sleep pretty well, but I'll be busy during the day.
All right. Have a great week.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Dr. Tom Nelson from madetoflourish.org. We'll take a little break and be back in just a minute. I really hope you can stay with me because at 20 minutes until the hour, Dr. David Aikman is going to be with us, our very favorite foreign affairs specialist, calling all the way from Bray, Ireland. We're going to take a little break for news. We'll be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with us today. Hope your day is starting off well. It is Monday, October 9th, Columbus Day. You're maybe one of the lucky few that don't have to go to work today. You're not even hearing my voice right now because you're still asleep. Anyway, Max Lucado draws the analogy between the ancient Israelites' journey from captivity to freedom and everyday life struggles that come our way.
For those of us who are Christians, there's Egypt. That's our life before we were Christians, which we were enslaved to sin and death. Then the promised land is what God promises and what he offers, and that's a life of victory and growing in faith. It's not a life where there is no struggle, but it is a life where there is always strength to match the struggle. But then many of us get caught in this land of in-between, and that is the land of the wilderness. and we end up there for a variety of reasons, and some of which we explore in the book. The big question is, when a person really does feel flatlined in their faith, what can we do? And I think Joshua, in the way he modeled his faith and led the children of Israel into the promised land, gives us at least one example of how to come out of that season of dryness into glory days.
If you want to hear that full interview, that's Max Lucado. Go to myfaithradio.com, type it in, Max Lucado. You'll get to that interview. And if you want to feel like you're a little old, let's go back to 1975 and imagine that sport coat you were wearing. And it's also the year that Sean Lennon was born. And he is 42 years old today. He's already outlived his dad by 2 years. Speaking of the Brits, we're going to take a short break and then speak to Dr. David Aikman, our favorite Brit. Be back in a minute.
Families call me all the time and say, "We need help. What do we do to fix our kid?" Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You know what my answer is? Well, there's very little we can do to fix our kid. You got to turn that notion around. What we've got to focus on is fixing ourselves. In the process, we're allowing God to do something with our child way beyond our own resources. So let's be practical. Is there something in your family you'd like to be different? Maybe a kid that's disrespecting others or blowing off the rules? The problem's so obvious, and of course, should result in consequences. But what's not quite as obvious is what God is trying to teach us. Quit trying to fix your kid and let your family's transformation begin with you.
Look for the new book from Mark Gregston titled Leaving a Legacy of Hope when you visit ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. If you and your family are running from one activity to the next, listen to this encouragement from Dr. Linda Mental on how to slow down and get balance back into your life.
If you're just running from activity to activity and you just feel like you're the taxi cab mom or dad who's just constantly on the run and it's too much, then a lot of times I'll say to families, just cut something out. Just decide you're not going to do it. Learn to say no and bring back the family meal. If the schedule is so crazy that people can't even eat one meal together, you really need to rethink that, because the benefits of eating a meal together are absolutely astounding. If you did that, your kids would do better with nutrition, with academic performance. They have a lower risk for delinquent behavior, and that really seems to me like a really small price to pay for some really big results that can make things so much better in your family.
Find more healthy tips for your family from Dr. Linda Mental at myfaithradio.com.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
It is 20 minutes until the top of the hour, and that walk-up music belongs to none other than Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs contributor all the way from Bray, Ireland. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Very nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. We had a rough week here in America last week with the shooting. I'd like to get to that in just a minute. There are so many topics I want to cover and get your expertise on. May I just begin?
Yes, please do.
All right. Let's start with the Iran missile deal and President Trump.
Right. Well, of course, the Iran missile deal has been a thorn in his throat ever since he started his campaign for the presidency last year. And the Iranians have not made life easier for themselves by continuously doing stuff that skirts the very edges of what is permissible under the agreement. And I think that the last straw is the sense that they may have been quietly helping or at least financing the North Koreans in their own operation to produce nuclear missiles. And that's a very worrying thing.
Oh, is it ever?
For Trump and for the United States.
Yeah. If North Korea were to launch a nuclear attack, the death toll would be crazy, wouldn't it?
It would be astronomical.
Yes.
And it's it's barely conceivable that they would have the foolishness to do this, but you cannot rely upon the common sense of Kim Jong-un, unfortunately.
He appears to be completely unpredictable, yet persistent with his test missiles and keep always pushing the limits, doesn't he?
Well, he does, and the threats that on the anniversary of the founding of the Korean Workers' Party this week, he may try to produce something else that is yet another sort of highlight of the missile program. That's very disturbing.
David, what do you think about President Trump's position with Kim Jong-un? I mean, he's treating him like a petulant teenager.
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, Trump, as you know, tends to speak off the top of his head when he gets annoyed by somebody or something. And he often doesn't seem to think through entirely what he's saying. But if one thing is clear, it is that the North Korean regime has no idea what Trump might do next.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing the U.S. has going for it is the fact that Kim Jong-un and his associates believe Trump is entirely unpredictable, just as we think Kim Jong-un is unpredictable. Mm. But the North Koreans have more to lose than we do if something goes badly wrong.
I agree with that. So, David, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Spain.
Oh, gosh. What a story. I mean, it would be hilarious, except it is very painful to watch, and the way the Spanish government of Arojo has behaved towards Catalonia has been very foolish indeed, I think. They could easily have avoided this crisis
mm-hmm.
if they had simply left the referendum to go ahead and just ignored it and then fought it out in the courts. But under the present situation, it's entirely possible that Puigdemont, the prime minister or the president of Catalonia, might declare independence tomorrow evening. Now, it seems that the odds against that are growing because there was such a voluminous demonstration of non-independence by Catalans demonstrating yesterday in Barcelona, that he might be a little inhibited. And the fact that Macron of the French Republic has said that he sees that if Catalonia becomes independent, they will not be allowed to join the European Union. So that is quite a serious inhibition against going independent in a sort of parliamentary act.
David, why do they want to go independent?
Well, the problems of Catalonia with Spain go back well before the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. And Catalonia was brutally subdued by President Franco, and many people were killed in the suppression of the Republican Civil War side in the period of the Spanish Civil War. And then under Franco's rule, no portion of Spain really had any independent power at all. So the Catalonians sort of suffered under a really nasty suppression under the Franco regime. And although in 1979 they signed on to an autonomy agreement with Spain that seemed at the time to be fairly liberal and reasonable,
mm-hmm.
in recent years they've come to the conclusion that they're not getting the best deal out of it. And so they're very annoyed at the Spanish government for not giving them more economic benefits from this.
Okay, so that's pretty much their motivation. And I don't know who the leaders of this movement are, but that you've just spelled out what that's their motivation.
Well, the main movement, Puigdemont, is a former journalist.
Okay.
I think is a trouble enough, and he's very outspoken against Spain for its repression and so forth. And he obviously wants to move the whole thing into an independence declaration, but I think he may be inhibited by the display of opposition to it by many Catalans.
Mm-hmm. And British Prime Minister Theresa May, they're trying to get her, they're trying to take her down, aren't they?
Well, they're not, actually. I mean, I think it's misleading, the report.
Then I was misled. Then I was misled. Just like me, David, well, to be misled.
No, anybody can be misled because there's so much. The reporting in Britain of British politics is notoriously rumor-led.
Okay, and, that's good to know.
And actually rather rude. I mean, you see a cabinet minister coming out of number 10 and a journalist shouts, Minister Rudd, are you going to resign? Or are you going to push the prime minister to resign? And this sort of stuff makes reporting quite difficult for serious journalists. But I think what you have now in the Conservative Party is a consensus that it would be absolute folly to get rid of Theresa May at this point and have a leadership vacuum and then a squabble before what might seem a very likely Labour win in the next general election. So the Conservatives are keeping their heads down, and even Boris Johnson at the Conservative Party conference last week said, the rest of you guys get behind Theresa May and put up or shut up, because this is the only way we're going to survive any contest with Labour.
Yeah, David, let me take a short break, and when we come back, I'd like to continue our conversation with Dr. David Aikman. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs specialist. And David, I think I've made 6 trips to Ireland, where you live. I've been to Bray many times, but first time I went there, I was having a nice conversation with a police officer there, and I said to him, do you carry a gun? He said, oh, heavens no. That just struck me as an American. It's like, are you kidding? So how does the U.S. compare with other countries when it comes to gun violence? It's been at the top of our minds all last week because of the shooting in Las Vegas.
Well, that's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, everybody in Europe and everybody in the world is sort of tearing their hair out saying, my gosh, why do the Americans have such lax gun laws? And you can understand the bewilderment. I mean, it would be inconceivable that somebody in England, for example, could buy a gun that he could easily convert basically into a machine gun,
mm-hmm.
and just book a hotel room and shoot at a whole bunch of people in the Wembley Stadium or something.
Right.
But the Brits and the Europeans need to take a breath before they really come down too hard on this situation, because the American First Amendment rights grew out of a war for independence against Great Britain way back more than 200 years ago. And one of the reasons that we have all these rights in the Constitution that were hammered out in that constitutional convention in Philadelphia is the fear that if we didn't have very solid rights for American citizens once the country was independent and operating constitutionally, a government might be able to repress any other rights by the use of force.
Mm-hmm.
And so although it's true that self-defense against Native Americans or against robbers in the West was one of the reasons behind the First Amendment, another one was very definitely a political fear that there was no guarantee against repression by the government itself if citizens were not armed. And that is at the back of most people's minds when they in the United States when they support very fervently the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. I heard a remark made by Molly Hemingway. She said, we're pretending we're having a debate about gun control, but we're really having a debate about the nature of evil and whether a big enough government can contain it.
You know, that's very thoughtful. And you may not know, but Molly Hemingway is a Christian and a Christian journalist, and she's done wonderful work, I think. And so that's a very creditable judgment by her. I mean, most of the commentaries on this terrible shooting sort of want to attribute it to the lack of gun control, this, that, and the other. But what it boils down to is the man was really demonized. He had demonic power operating within him when he pointed those very heavily loaded guns against innocent civilians below. There was nothing rational about this. And although you might be able to find some ideological streak somewhere or other, there are enough evil people in the world for people to do that kind of action when they have the possibility of doing so. So that's the tragedy of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. What has been the conversation in Ireland around the espresso machine regarding this?
Sorry, what espresso machine?
Oh, espresso. Coffee pot.
Okay.
Yeah. Water cooler. What conversation is being had?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay. I'm just trying to be clever this morning.
Yeah, no. Water. Yes, that's right. Conversation around the water cooler.
Exactly.
Well, it is, of course, a lot of lamenting the fact that the United States has freedoms to operate guns that makes this thing possible. But don't forget, one of the worst shootings in Europe was by a Norwegian.
Oh, that's right.
Against a whole bunch of socialist summer camp students.
Oh.
And Norway has incredibly strong gun control laws. So if you have a bad guy who really wants to do something, you can be sure that anywhere in the world he's probably going to be able to do it.
That's right. David, I forgot about him. And wasn't his prison sentence like 2 years or something?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he got a very light slap on the wrist. And, Bill, I don't know whether you give me permission or you have time or even you want to discuss the death of the founder of Playboy and the recent scandal involving Harvey Weinstein.
Yes,
complained that it was just...
We have 2 minutes.
You can do that. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, Harvey Weinstein complained that the reason that he acted inappropriately with women was it was just the culture of the day. I mean, that is the biggest cop-out of all. The culture of the day was being poisoned by the founder of Playboy magazine and by the encouragement of males to take their lusts out on women in any and all circumstances. And, you know, when, what was his name, Playboy founder?
Hugh Hefner.
Momentarily.
Hugh Hefner. Mm-hmm.
When Hugh Hefner died, he got all these plaudits from Hollywood types saying what a great guy he was. And how many women had their marriages ruined by the Playboy philosophy, which encouraged open adultery among married men and all kinds of inconceivable lechery among young men in general. I mean, that is a price that society has paid, and that was the culture which nurtured Harvey Weinstein, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, explain this one to me, David. The Weinstein company says they're going to take the lead of sexual harassment and abuse by firing Harvey. And so how is waiting 30 years and paying out a bunch of settlements taking the lead?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of questions about that. I mean, there are a lot of questions about Harvey Weinstein in general, his political positions, his alliances with different people. He was very close to the Clintons. And, I mean, he has a very sort of suspicious past, if you look at it from the social consequences of his allegiances and his loyalties and his actions. And so for the Weinstein Company to adopt this sort of super righteous after the fact attitude is a bit dubious.
I think. Thank you, David. I got to run. Have a great week.
Thank you, Bill. Yep.
It is 2 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be back.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.